Ave Maria, the following program discusses adult themes. Viewer discretion is advised.
Thank you. The only little footnote on that is I'm originally from Pennsylvania and then New York City for many, many years, as you will see from my testimony. Not that it's that important, but it's sort of been, I think, all four corners of the United States. I've been in a same-sex identity, and here we go. And thank you very much. I'd like to tell you this evening about a preborn baby whose mother considered having him aborted, about a young, innocent child who was sexually molested by his mother's brother, by his own brother, his older brother, and by an older neighbor, all by the time he was just 10 years old, and about a very good boy, a caring boy, who lived in constant fear since he was 5 years old until he went away to college, constant fear of being beaten to death or shot to death by his violent father and his mean, evil brother. And you've probably guessed, because of the way the introduction was done, I've been speaking about myself, my early life. And although I learned to hate my brother and my father for many reasons, I never felt anger or bitterness towards anyone who sexually molested me. I was like an object in motion, tending to stay in motion, doing what came naturally. Before I was a senior in college, I found myself loitering in the streets of New York City, Montreal, Miami, Paris, and Rome, searching for a man to love me. I seeking validation from my life really, well, I should say seeking validation from others, I became an international fashion model and chose other glamorous careers. And it was all about, my life was really centered on finding that knight in shining armor, that perfect Prince Charming to complete me and love me. And although I did find a famous real-life prince and too many charmings, including other royalty, an ambassador to Great Britain, an NFL All-Pro Super Bowl player, a commander of a nuclear sub from the United States Navy, and a cast of thousands of others whose names, faces, and bodies soon became just a blur in my mind. I went out with beautiful people, famous people, rich people, to all the in places, to Studio 54 in New York City, and to chic A-list parties where drugs flowed like Coca-Cola. I was a sex addict before I ever heard of the word. I marched for gay rights with my friends in New York City, San Francisco, and Washington, D.C. And like most homosexuals, we hated the Catholic Church and wanted it destroyed. It stood between us and what we most worshipped. Sex had become our God and was our God. I want to say the gay wasn't what we were, it was really who we were. And love became less about intimacy and more about thrills and lust. And that really made love and intimacy just a fantasy. that really spiraled downward to a darker type of sex and to forbidden substances. And that would have been the end of my story had grace not saved my life so many times. But it took me decades to connect the dots. And my lover Jerry and I were living in New York City when the AIDS epidemic hit. And although he was new to homosexuality, we were living together in the same apartment for about a year. And although he was new to homosexuality, he was one of the first 900 people in the United States diagnosed with AIDS. And he died a terrible death a few years later when almost every homosexual person that was in my life, and they were almost the only people in my life, was also dying. I chose not to take the AIDS test because I knew I would be dead soon as well. However, when the experimental drug AZT, the experimental AIDS drug AZT, hit the market, I felt obligated to find out, so I took the test. I felt doomed driving down Dolores Avenue in San Francisco on my way to the health clinic, knowing that I would soon hear my dreaded sentence, death by AIDS. It was just, I remember that moment so well. And then a ray of sunlight, beamed through my sunroof and lighted up my car with a beautiful golden light, and a blissful calm came over me. And I felt words from my interior. I didn't really hear words, but from the very center of my being, I felt words. And those words said, "Don't worry, Paul. You do not have AIDS because you have so much to do to make up for the way you've been living." And even though at that point in my life I turned against God, turned against the Catholic Church, somehow, I was agnostic at best, I felt in my heart that those words were from God. And so at the clinic, seated across from the doctor, when he opened the envelope, it was anonymous in those days, the way we would take our test, the doctor seated across from me, I knew what he was going to say. And as I watched his lips, he said, "You," what appeared to be in slow motion, "you are negative." And I felt that it was as if a decree just came from above, pardoning my death sentence and giving me the opportunity to make up for the life that I've been living. But preferring the decadence, I ignored that opportunity. I was sure for maybe an hour, two, five, maybe that night, but the next day I was the same old Paul doing the same old things. And I just felt that this was wonderful. I felt that it was like God's grace, although I didn't even know that word or what grace really meant at that time. But again, I went on with my life, as I always did, like an object in motion, staying in motion. And I didn't know that I was adopted until I was 30 years old. And against all possible odds, I found my mother 42 years after she gave me up. And she, as I referred to it earlier, she was thinking about an abortion, but in those days, she was a bit of a wimp like I am, and she was too frightened by the back alley butcher situations of the procedure. And so, obviously, you know the result. She told me that the thing that most solidified her with God in her whole life, there were three things. One, the minute that they took me away from her in the hospital. Two, losing her only other son in a car accident when he was in his 20s. And three, being lovingly reconnected with me. My mom and I are just so happy that she chose life and that we are so lovingly connected. We're the best friends in the whole world. And again, against all odds. My spiritual nerve finally began to get touched a little bit, sometimes by small things. I shouldn't say small, I should say subtle things, like a homily at a friend's funeral, and sometimes by more obvious things, like hearing a voice out of nowhere as I watched life drain out of my very best friend as I leaned over him as he was sprawled out on a sidewalk with blood gushing out of his head. And I was even, I felt that my spiritual nerve was even touched when I was ridiculing a stroke victim. I pointed mockingly at the television screen, at the full-faced woman with a distorted smile, called my friend into the room and said, you've got to see this. It's like when I was a kid, these old nuns. I never went to Catholic school. I only heard nuns were mean. but we both laughed and made fun of this woman. And as I went to turn the, by the way, she also was wearing an eye patch. And she was neatly tucked into a black and white nun's habit. Her name was Mother Angelica. And as I was surfing the television, as I often did in those days, I would come across her every once in a while. And the second time I did the same thing, my friend came in the room. We made fun of her. We laughed. He left the room. I went to turn it off, and she said something that really struck me. And unfortunately, I can't remember exactly what that was. But it happened again and again when I would watch her for 3 minutes, 5 minutes, then started watching her. But what happened was that, none or no none, I felt that she knew and spoke the truth about God and about faith. Before Mother Angelica, I always thought that spiritual truth was just somebody's vague, undefinable theory. Mother Angelica's words, I mean, she just drew me in. I used to turn, after I'd watch her, I would turn the television off and change the channel so that as if I were watching pornography, I did the same thing for pornography, so that if somebody turned the TV on, I wouldn't want them to know how dare I watch a Catholic nun. but it was just incredible, and Mother Angelica showed me not only that truth really exists, but that the prayers are really answered. And her words about God's love and endless mercy just gave a new dimension to my life, one pointing to Jesus Christ and to the church. Then I started connecting the dots a little bit more and a little bit more. Shortly after Mother Angelica, and because of her, and because I'm sure of many other things, and because of God's grace, one day I woke up and I had this burning desire to call the person whom I hated most in the world. And that was my brother Joseph, who had stolen my mother's entire life savings, and he had always been abusive to me. We hardly spoke in 30 years, and it was really most often just to get through him to get my mother on the phone. But that morning, I picked up the phone and I said, Joe, you know what you've done. I love you and I forgive you. And we had the most beautiful conversation ever. For the first time in my life, the only time in my life that I really had a conversation with a true brotherly conversation. Coincidentally enough, within a few weeks, I got a call at the office from the police, and they said that my brother had died from a sudden heart attack. Now, I was overwhelmed with different kinds of emotions, but I knew, I immediately recognized the gift from God. Had my brother died 1 minute prior to my calling him, I would have never had the opportunity to go from hating him to loving him in an instant as I did. Again, thanks to grace. And my brother Joey, right now, is the first person that I pray for in my family when I do pray, which is often. And Joe taught me that by accepting God's love and recognizing God's love, we can love even our worst enemy. So now the dots really were connecting. I mean, I was hit on the head so many times that these spiritual coincidences brought me back to the Catholic Church after a 40-year absence. And it was wonderful. I confessed, I promised to sin no more, and I joyfully received communion. But then it was like I hit a brick wall. I begin to understand the true reason for sexual intimacy and how sexual intimacy should only take place within the sacred bond of marriage between a man and a woman. And I was devastated because I tried and I tried and I tried and I could not resist those lustful temptations. The die was set, the die was cast, thinking that I could, and I tried again and again and again, and I would go to confession, receive communion, commit sins of the flesh, and repeat the pattern over and over again. And I felt lost and desperate, thinking that I could never attain chastity. I felt like I was trapped living a life of shame, trapped between my same-sex attraction and my faith. And then a few years ago, I heard about Courage, that ministers to people with SSA who would like to move beyond their homosexual identity. I excitedly learned everything I could on the internet. Because Courage is based on the 12-step program, I spoke to all of my friends, and I had a lot of them, the 12-step Alcoholic Anonymous program. I spoke to all of my friends who were in AA. Became familiar with Father John Harvey. He might as well be a doctor too. Father John Harvey, and listened to him gently explain all of the reasons why we have to be courageous in the battle against same-sex attraction. And I really, really got it. It was so clear to me when he said, we always have the chance not to give in to the inclination. I was so overwhelmed that now I had a new hope and a new possibility of perhaps becoming a true Catholic. And I started praying the rosary and going to the Adoration Chapel and really started believing. Then over a short period, I was hospitalized with 3 unrelated emergencies, and due to another issue, I needed a heart operation as soon as possible. This was very unusual for me because I hadn't been in the hospital for over 30 years. Since I was seriously ill and hospitalized for many, many days with incurable chronic hepatitis B when I was much, much younger. And back then the doctor said, Paul, you'll probably be all right if you live a very healthy life, don't get exhausted, and definitely avoid drugs and liquor. And it was the 70s. And my motto was the same as James Dean's. I think he said it first. I'm sure he did. Live fast, die young. So I could care less what happened to me after 50 years old. But so, of course, I ignored his advice. And yes, it was really sex, drugs, and disco. did I say rock and roll? I did say disco? Okay. Just wanted to make sure I got that. Although I'm starting to appreciate rock now a little bit more. Once courage renewed my hope of being able to actually become a true Catholic, I began to worry about running out of energy and out of life itself. And I wanted to honor the one who years earlier had said, "You do not have AIDS because you have so much to make up for the way you've been living." And so I didn't know what to do, so I followed Father Harvey's and Mother Angelica's advice, and I prayed. And I remember it so clearly. I said, "Jesus, please give me just a few years of health and energy so that I can make up for the way that I've been living, and so that I could bring you many, many, many souls to save." And then I said another prayer. I said, "Jesus," at the same prayer session, me, myself, and I in my bedroom, and I said, "Jesus, please help me to be chaste. I know I can't do it without you." Just days later, my doctor of over 20 years, who specialized in people with same-sex attraction as her clients, because it was in an area where that was pretty prevalent. Just days later, my doctor phoned me with the results of my latest blood test. I would have my blood tested twice a year because of my liver situation. And unlike previous tests, this one indicated that my liver functions were normal, and inexplicably, that I no longer had hepatitis B. Because she had never heard of anyone with my serious hepatitis B and my condition and my type of hepatitis B, she had me retest it. But when the follow-up test came back and verified that I did not have hepatitis B, I wasn't surprised, because again, I could feel when she told me the first time, I could just feel it in my heart that it was something that nobody can control, but somebody much more powerful than any of us. And so I did not have hepatitis B, and she said, "And something else, which I don't understand, but not only do you not have hepatitis B, you're actually immune to hepatitis B." And I haven't been hospitalized since, and I never did need that heart operation. I asked Jesus for strength and energy, but apparently God knows better than I do, so he cured me as well. My other prayer was answered more slowly. You know, I felt supported by courage. I felt supported by the men and women, knowing that men and women were encouraged across the United States and in other countries. Just knowing that really helped me an awful lot before I attended a courage meeting. And although my attempts to resist those lustful acts were unsuccessful, I slowly began to feel some control over them. And then, after months of defeat, a grace-filled moment enabled me not to give in to the inclination. And experiencing something that is beyond my comprehension, I became chaste. And by exchanging my homosexuality for a more complete identity, I feel a joy and a fullness and feel completed and whole like I never knew even existed. Wanting to share my story with others, I wanted to bring a courage chapter to my diocese out in California. But when the bishop objected, I began to make the 200-mile round-trip drives to courage. And when I got there and I heard the expressions of love and acceptance, I knew for sure that I was really in the right place. It's very intense for me to hear men and women expressing with such raw honesty how they're struggling and battling their deepest desires. But it's gloriously uplifting being with men and women who are facing such heavy sacrifices simply because of their enormous love for God. Courage really helped me before, like I said, before I ever attended a meeting. And I to this day, the word courage just reverberates through me because it has so many meanings, but it's also the meaning of the organization that really helped, I believe, helped save me. Because like my brother Joe, if this hadn't happened and I would have died 1 second before I learned about courage, I would have never had such an opportunity. I joined Courage mainly to help others, but in return, I have received a stronger ability to resist temptation, a better self-understanding, and a stronger faith. For me, it's such a defining moment in Courage when my brothers and sisters with tear-filled eyes explain how they were destroying themselves with liquor and drugs, how they were exposing themselves to AIDS, and how they were planning their suicides and how they would be dead right now had they also not discovered courage when they did. And I know it's not easy for us to swim against that cultural wave that is smashing against the sanctity of marriage and against the sacredness of our body and of sexual intimacy. But having been immersed in and addicted to the homosexual identity for almost half a century, I am a living testimony that we do always have the chance not to give in to the inclination. And I'd feel morally negligent if I didn't share my good news with others in order so that they can understand that there is hope. This is my first national Courage meeting. I've been to a small Courage retreat. I've never met anyone from InCourage before, but as I've told some of the people today in Courage, the joy I get to speak to some of these parents who are hurting as much as I am hurting or have been hurting in my life, the joy I get that maybe, just maybe, I can give them some hope that they don't have to beat themselves up, that they don't have to be angry at their children, that God, in spite of who I was, in spite of, and when I talked about that deeper, darker sex, it got very, very dark. I really saw the face of evil. And so if God touched me the way he did, for all you mothers and fathers, he is there for you. And praying and loving is the very best thing I think you can do. And I'm done, so I don't know how my time, I mean, I just have a footnote or two. Am I okay? Thank you. Oscar Wilde, the 19th century playwright, author, poet, and one of the great gay heroes of our time right now. He's quoted in many gay newspapers. He really is just an icon for them. He wrote, "I was so typical a child of my age that in my perversity, and for that perversity's sake, I turned the good things in my life to evil, and the evil things in my life to good." Oscar Wilde's statement sort of describes my former life. I was one of the many who preferred the darkness, but by God's grace, I have fallen in love with his light. And with courage's help, I have fallen in love with God. And this really is the final footnote. I think it's important that I explain that I was a very happy person through all of that life where I was so much on the wrong side of the tracks. I never realized what I was missing. And I've explained this to some people before, but it's sort of like that I have a happiness and a joy now. I was happy before, but I was adrenaline happy, and I didn't realize it. So it was one rush after another rush, and I call it an adrenaline happy. And I didn't know there was any other kind of happy, but there is. There's a happiness from within, with yourself and within. I would go on vacations and never enjoy the beaches, never been to Rome, been to Israel, been to Egypt. And in each one of those places, I was obsessed and occupied with pursuing sex and men. That's where I met the ambassador to Great Britain, but he wasn't Egypt. He wasn't an Egyptian ambassador. But I never, I just don't want to turn anybody in, if you know what I mean. But I never enjoyed life. I never saw the world. And so this is what I wanted to say, that you know, it was sort of like when you're playing with your Barbie and Ken doll and you're playing pretend marriage. It's their wedding day. And it's so much fun when you're a little kid. I played with dolls. But it's so much fun to have that wedding day when you're a little kid with those dolls. But what does that have to do with the real feeling of what your real wedding day feels like? And that's the comparison that I make. I was happy. I was in Toyland, in Never Never Land in New York City. But the happiness, and that's why it might sound hokey, but it's such a different world. And some of my most euphoric moments in my other life were when I was with beautiful and famous people with the best champagne and the best party favors in penthouses overlooking the spectacular skyline of New York City. And I'm from Pennsylvania, the country. It was like I must have died and went to heaven as I looked out. And I've got to tell you that happiness, that euphoria that would have lasted me a lifetime, pales, absolutely pales to when I'm taking the body and blood of our Lord in church at Mass. Thank you.